Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Dinner.
You got to
know. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Unlike Brett Favre, we are playing this week.
First time you've been able to say that in 297 games.
Welcome to the show. I am Paul Harrah's, sitting at the feature table at Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, and sitting right next to me is Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. It is a very busy day here at Harrah's. The 2-5 game got started early today. There are a couple of tables of that. There's a bunch of players in the 1-2 games and the 3-6 games, and 98 people playing in the 1 o'clock tournament here today.
Okay, why am I not in this tournament now? In fact, it was so much. Do you realize that they had to actually move people from our table here because
yes.
The game was still going on from last night?
Yeah, the 1-2-5 game was sitting at this feature table all night long, went all night through the morning, and was still going on here this afternoon when we came in, and we had to kick them off and move them over to table 7. Pretty cool.
Well, I noticed they weren't too sad about moving. Then I looked at the stack of chips they had in front of them, so
yeah
they were happy.
Yeah. Couple of things we want to get to before we bring in our guest for today, and that is that Antonio Esfandiari, who was supposed to be on last week's show, couldn't be because he was busy winning the Five Diamond Classic at the Bellagio, and then he said, okay, I'll be on with you guys next week. Remind me. And so I sent him a text yesterday, reminder, you're coming on the show with us Tuesday. He said, I can't. I'll be flying back from Detroit. He was in Detroit filming a movie with 50 Cent and Bruce Willis and Paul Walker from the Fast and Furious movies. He and Phil Locke, apparently, are in the movie.
With Bruce Willis and 50 Cent.
Yeah, I think that they're only in a scene with 50 Cent, and I'm guessing it's around a poker table. But he couldn't be with us today because he's in the air right now.
Okay.
So to the guy who does our promos at 590 The Fan KFNS, you will once again be running an Antonio Esfandiari promo for next week's show. We're going to get, you know how many times Antonio has tried to make the show or we've tried to book him? It's literally from before this year's World Series.
Wow.
We have not been able to make the schedules mesh. Right. But he will be on with us at some point before the end of this year. That's our goal.
There we go.
That's our goal. So anyway, here we go with show number 98. Last week on show number 97, we dedicated the entire hour to the online poker bill that the majority leader in the Senate, Harry Reid of Nevada, was trying to push through. And we went through all the pluses, all the minuses, the short term versus the long term, the chances of it passing, the chances of everybody being happy. Well, as you know, in that last department, you can never make everybody happy.
Well, yeah, and I'm not for sure this bill was making very many people happy whatsoever. But we gave our analysis of it. We gave what we thought it was the intention of the bill. We gave what we thought the result of the bill would be. But we actually have somebody now that can tell us what is going on there for sure, hopefully.
Yep.
And I would love to get a good update. It's a friend of mine that I've known for the last couple of years. I've been helping support with the PPA, a gentleman by the name of John Pappas. I think the last time I ran into him was probably in Denver for support for Senator Bennett out there for a fundraiser for him. But John is always a wealth of information and very straightforward, and I always look forward to talking to him.
Well, John, welcome back to the final table.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So as of right now, a little bit after 3 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, December 14th, is the online poker bill still alive?
Well, I wish I had more positive news. I'm certainly not ready to put a nail in the coffin, but I would say it's certainly on life support at this point. The most likely vehicle for the bill was going to be the tax bill that was, but once that was not added to the tax bill late on Thursday into Friday morning last week, The opportunity for this bill getting through between now and the end of the year, I think, has become very slim. Although not completely dead, I do think that it's going to be difficult. There are folks here working furiously to see what can be done to salvage it. But, you know, I want to try to put a realistic, not spin, but a realistic take on the situation. I think it's going to be very difficult for it to get done between now and when Congress will adjourn, which could be as soon as Friday. There are some other vehicles. One will be, a major spending bill. Another will be another what they call an omnibus bill. So, there's some opportunity, but I think we may want to start thinking about, all right, what's our focus on for next year, and how do we move past this? I wouldn't call it a setback, but I think it's certainly a lot of optimism and hope that there was going to be something done in the waning days of this Congress, and it seems less likely now than it did certainly a week ago. I felt very optimistic this time last Tuesday that something could happen. But it also raises a question of, was the bill that was being pushed something that everybody loved? And I think Dennis aptly pointed out that it wasn't something that everybody loved, and maybe something that only a few people loved.
Wow.
But in the end, was it going to be the best result for the long-term health and stability of the internet broker marketplace? And I would argue that, yes, it would have been.
Well, we got several things to talk about here. Let's start out the bill that it was supposed to be attached to. Is that coalition that put this bill together, the magical 60 votes, so fragile that the addition of of this bill being tacked on would ruin that?
Yeah, I mean, it really, the tax bill got to be extremely political, particularly when the House Democrats signaled that they were going to oppose the compromise that that Obama and Senate Republicans forged just a few days before. And once that kind of blew up in the face of members of Congress, we knew an issue like ours would certainly kind of be the, one of the casualties of it, and that ended up being the case. I don't think anyone was willing to even test to find out if what internet poker would do. I think the concern was that if you did that, and if all Democrats voted no, or a lot of Democrats ended up voting no on the tax bill, and because of internet poker, you still had somewhere between 10 and 20 Republicans voting no on it because of internet poker, then that would kill the bill. And I don't think anybody was willing to take that risk. And like I said, we were kind of a casualty of other political issues going on in Congress that maybe were unrelated to our bill, but that's kind of what happens.
Well, the one thing that still bothers me, and this is not poker related, but I'll just make the statement, then we need to move on and actually get into the bill and the pluses and minuses for it. The magical 60 still bugs the heck out of me. I really thought that this thing was founded. It's supposed to be a 51-49 as a majority instead of this blooming 60 that everybody has to have, or it's a stalemate in there. Ability to close debate for if you have less than 60 people is not there.
Welcome to the United States Senate, Dennis.
Talk about a stalemate and non-productive body if you aren't very, very careful here.
All right. Now,
it's very frustrating, particularly from the inside. I've worked on public policy issues, not just poker, for the last 15 years here in Washington, and several initiatives I've worked on have become victim to the whole cloture and 60-vote phenomenon. And really, I think in the end, it does serve to be as a detriment to getting public policy issues addressed and taken up. So it's unfortunate, but that's probably a different fight for a different day.
All right, let me get back to the bill for a second. After we did our in-depth analysis for an hour on last week's show, I heard from quite a few young poker pros, guys in their 20s who've been grinding out a living online, or in some cases grinding out a really good living online, who hated the idea of the bill, particularly the 15-month blackout period in which all online poker would be illegal in the United States. And there are other issues related to that, but they hated that idea, that they might have to move to another country to play poker, or for 15 months, God forbid, get an actual job. So they said, we hope this thing doesn't pass. So let's talk to them for just a second here, John. If the bill doesn't go through now, and then it is unlikely to go through for quite a while, is it good or bad for them, the people who are playing online poker right now? And does anything change from what we've had for the last few years since the UIGEA passed?
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's a great question, and it's really one that, you know, I think only time will tell. But I do think that, you know, it would be a double-edged sword. Certainly now in the short term, you wouldn't have a situation where the largest internet poker sites that are taking play in the U.S. would probably leave the marketplace. I don't think there's any question that PokerStars and Full Tilt would like to have a license under a U.S. license, and if they ever wanted to get a U.S. license, they would leave the market under that 15-month freeze period that was proposed in the bill. They would leave so they could reapply and try to get a license. So that would strand a lot of players. Whether or not another competitor would come in and fill the void for that 15 months, I think that's probably likely. Would it be possible for a player to play? I mean, nothing in the bill would have criminalized the player from playing. It certainly would have been clearly illegal for a site to be accepting play. But you know, I think there would still be opportunities for people to play online even during that 15-month freeze period. And I think that's why the 15-month freeze period is so ludicrous to begin with. What was it trying to accomplish? It was clearly trying to favor one or two Nevada gaming interests at the detriment of the poker-playing community. Certainly there would have to be some time period in which there would have to be stoppage while the time between you enact the bill and you start issuing licenses. That doesn't need to be 15 months. I think that could be very condensed into 6 months or even less than 6 months. So we always thought the 15-month time frame was ridiculous, and I can understand why, you know, if you're a day-to-day player, why you felt very offended by that measure. With that said, we were still supporting the bill because we believed in the long term. It was going to maintain the prosperity and the validity of internet poker. I think, you know, what internet poker may look like over the next 15 months without a bill is tenuous at best. Not saying that that it's going to become more difficult for people to play, but I think states are going to start really moving quickly on enacting legislation. And as we all, I think, have discussed on this program in the past, is that those state bills are going to kind of balkanize internet poker by making each state its own internet poker marketplace, not allowing players from those states to play outside of those borders. And then I think it's only going to favor certain interests within those states. And I think players are going to be kind of left without with a subpar playing experience if it does go state by state. You know, there's also the fear that, you know, enforcement measures could get even stronger against the existing operators. The ability to deposit and withdraw could become more difficult. And the player often doesn't feel that. You know, the players are generally meant to be felt whole the entire time, while it's the site themselves who kind of has to bear the burden of getting players their money, their deposits, as well as their payouts. So it's an interesting dynamic. But, you know, I guess only time will tell to see what the marketplace looks like over the next 15 months, whether that freeze would have been, how detrimental that freeze would have really been. I think it's harder to say what internet poker will look like 15 months from now without some sort of legislative clarity.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris, and we're talking with John Pappas, the Executive Director of the Poker Players Alliance.
I want a little clarification on something. Now, I've been involved in this for the last year fairly heavily, and I was shocked by this 15-month one, and I've said the same explanation that you just gave. Don't know where it came from, don't think we needed that long, all this other. Who introduced this idea of this 15-month blackout, and how are they justifying it?
Right. Well, I think initially, and you know, I'm not pointing fingers here yet.
I'll point fingers. Tell me you too.
I think initially there was some Nevada gaming interests who looked at this and said, hey, there's no way that we can compete with the incumbent operators unless they're forced to leave the market for a period of time and then re-enter. And keep in mind, those same guys not only wanted to do that 15 months freeze, but then again further penalize the existing operators from being able to come into the market for at least another 12 to 18 months after that. So there was that first concern. What I don't think that they realize is that, hey, wait a second, there's some opportunity here that where we might be able to partner with these guys. And instead of trying to find out how we can screw the offshore guys, why don't we find a way that we can get into the market even sooner by either partnering with them or using their software, however they wanted to do it. So there was some short-sightedness, I think, initially by some Vegas industries and Vegas interests. And then after, I think, maybe they woke up to the idea that, okay, not only does this exclude us from having an opportunity to partner with any of the existing operators during that 15-month period, but we also are just opening the door for another competitor to come in and take play for 15 months. The players aren't going to just, you know, go away. They're going to find another place to play, and then trying to re-engage those players in the license sites after 15 months, I think, would be very difficult. So from a business side, I think Vegas maybe came around to it, but unfortunately by then, the true opponents of internet gaming, those who don't want internet gaming at all, saw this and said, yes, that's actually a great idea. We need to shut down the market. We need to do something to show some strength. And that's, I think, kind of how the situation devolved. The PPA obviously was opposed to it from day one. We fought it from day one, and unfortunately, we lost that fight.
The explanation for the period, the ability for these other companies to ramp up in that 12-month, 18-month, whatever it is there, whether I agree with it or not, at least I can see some sort of justification for that. I still see absolutely no justification for this 15-month one. The only people that are being penalized there that I can see are the actual players themselves. It's almost like these interests in Washington want to say, well, you've been playing online and we didn't think you should be, so we're going to penalize you guys for 15 months. And I hope that wasn't the intent of it.
John, what did you hear from the players, the members? I mean, you've got over 1 million members of the PPA.
Right.
What did they say to you? You must have gotten feedback.
It was mixed. It was mixed. I would say, you know, obviously those who are upset are the most vocal, and that's true in any instance. People don't ever call up to say what a great job you're doing. They always call up to say what a terrible job you're doing.
I've been in radio for 32 years. I can completely relate to that.
So you know, we certainly heard from a lot of folks, and I think those who are, you know, as you said, the professional grinders, or even a recreational, you know, player who really enjoys playing, you know, $10 worth of poker a week online. They were upset. They were upset by it. But, you know, once you kind of explained it to them, explained kind of this short-term pain versus long-term gain, I think people got it. And I think that what I tried to explain earlier and maybe didn't do so very well is that, you know, I don't think the players obviously see what they are experiencing now, and they're experiencing a great internet poker experience. But no one can guarantee them what that experience is going to look like 6 months from now, 8 months from now, or 15 months from now. And we felt, from our perspective, that the best way to preserve the long-term viability of the market was to have some kind of clarity, and the Reed bill presented exactly that.
Okay. Now, when you talk about the uncertainty, another thing that I heard from some of these young players is, it's already not easy to get money onto Stars or Tilt or UB or Doyle's Room or whatever it is. It's not impossible, obviously, because plenty of them are doing it, but there are obstacles because of the UIGEA. Do you expect that to become harder, that online players will have their financial ability to play squeezed as the federal government enforces UIGEA even more fiercely?
that is, I think that's a very legitimate concern. I really do. And again, you know, I think that, you know, the sites have a lot more experience as to how it's being enforced. The sites, for lack of a better term, have done a very good job of spoiling the players, making sure that the players feel no pain and that the sites absorb all the pain. I don't know if that's a real long-term business strategy for any of these guys, and if that makes sense for them. So, I do fear that there could either be, you know, the UIGA could be more strongly or effectively enforced, and that, you know, all of the ease of deposits and withdrawals could become more difficult over the next 15 months without our, you know, without you know, some sort of federal legislative clarity.
Well, all right, we've been talking about all the potential problems and negatives and everything here. The fact that this came up in the form of a bill and went as far as it did has to be looked on as somewhat of a positive sign, though, I hope.
Well, certainly, and because, you know, the prospective champion of it is the majority leader of the U.S. Senate, I think that's certainly a positive. And like I said, I'm not willing to say the fat lady sung already, but if we do go into next year, I think we're, I still think that there's opportunity here. I know a lot of folks have said, oh, it's doom and gloom. You've got Republicans controlling the House. This is never going to happen. I take a completely different view of it. I think there's still a real legitimate chance of getting something done, even in the next Congress. And the PPA certainly isn't going to just fold up its tent and say, you know, we're done. We think there's a real opportunity, and we think that even, you know, next year more than ever, I think the players deserve a bill.
Well, you've got a couple of very, very valid and compelling points. The fact that you're asking to be regulated so that everybody can feel safe and free to play on any of these sites. The fact that you're bringing in potentially a huge amount of revenue to a lot of economies that are very, very strapped for it. Did you make any kind of inroads with some of these guys that were so staunchly against it? Do you see some breaks in the armor, maybe at least, some of these guys?
You know, those who are so staunchly against it, I think, are going to always continue to be a problem. I don't know if reason is going to get through to those people. I mean, there's those people who are so staunchly against it by moral, you know, on moral grounds, and no amount of money that you throw at the situation, no amount of logic that you throw at the situation is ever going to get them to change their position that gambling is just evil. And I know you guys face that in St. Louis with groups, and we face it here in Washington, D.C. with groups and lawmakers. There's just those who are opposed to gambling, and that's really just going to be it for them. And I don't know if we win them over with logic and money. But I certainly think that there are a lot of members in the middle there who are persuaded by those arguments, particularly the argument that, hey, you know, whether you like it or not, you know, whether Congress does something during the lame duck or not, next year millions of Americans are still going to be playing online poker. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing so on sites that the federal government has no oversight over, and our state governments collect no money from. And the players have, you know, all the consumer protection assurances that they would get under regulation, which they don't necessarily have now. So, I think the message going into next year is going to be the status quo doesn't work, and Congress, you need to kind of pull your head out of sand and face reality, and let's tackle this issue head on. I think we have a really good opportunity to do that, particularly when you look at the House. Many say, oh, it's going to be Republican-dominated. Certainly is, but there's also 1/4 of the House is going to be brand-new members of Congress, people who've never really been exposed to this issue, whom we have an opportunity to get educated on the ground floor as soon as they open their doors for business here in the beginning of January. The PPA is going to be the first people coming into their offices and meeting with them and educating them about internet gaming legislation and why we believe it's important. And that's going to be followed up by our members, you know, sending letters and making phone calls. And I think we can really make some progress. I also think that our message resonates with kind of this Tea Party movement, this idea of, you know, individual liberty and personal responsibility and government getting out of the monetary decisions of Americans. I think we have an opportunity to kind of ride on those coattails for as long as those coattails last.
John, I know that we started off the show talking about how the Reid bill is, you know, on life support, if anything. But there are reports out of Washington being reported online today that there is a new draft of the bill, which does have some changes, one of which would be that the licensing fee wouldn't be 20% of revenue, but will be 16% of revenue, that instead of the online sites having to wait 2 or 3 years after the blackout period, that that number might be reduced to 1.5 years, that states would be able to have intra-state gambling that wouldn't be erased by the new bill, and other things. Have you seen a new draft of a bill today, and what do you know about those developments?
I wouldn't necessarily say that that's a new draft. That's a draft that's maybe the latest draft. Again, it's so difficult to discuss a bill that's circulating kind of in cyberspace because the bill in its real form is changing by the minute, I would say. Last week, it was literally changing by the minute. This week, it's probably not changing as much, and the draft that people are looking at is probably where they ended up in the negotiations. I really don't have much to comment on it, except that I think, you know, some of the tax structure, that's fine, bringing that down. I think the allocations may have changed a little bit versus how much federal government gets versus how much the state governments get in revenue. I would be a little concerned about the opt-in and opt-out. That was one of the things, you know, the PPA. There's really four things the PPA wants to focus on if we get this into next year in terms of correcting the bill. And I'll just say, obviously, the freeze, the 15-month freeze, is something we want to shorten or completely eliminate if possible through some reasonable transition. The idea of the 3-year ringed fence, what they call, with not being able to take international play, that it only be U.S. players playing against U.S. players, is something that we wanted to change. There's also not a definition in there of poker winnings, and we wanted to get that defined in there so it's much easier for reporting of taxes for the players. I'm forgetting my fourth point. we wanted to make sure that the further, I guess what people were calling the penalty box on the existing operators was minimized as well. So, those were kind of the things that we were looking at, that we'll be looking at next year to improve in any bill that gets reintroduced. Discussing what this current draft is, I don't know what that gets us, because I'm not confident that the draft that's even out there today would be the draft that if something got airmailed on Friday afternoon into a bill, I don't think it's the draft that you see right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I don't know whether anything's going to come out of this. You almost scared me, but unfortunately I can almost agree with when you say you kept mentioning the word logic and not existing in Washington. to me, and I somebody please explain this to me. On one side, you're arguing about a unregulated, unlicensed site doing it to where the players can't feel free, and yet you have those very same, these predominant sites coming to Washington and trying to sponsor and saying, please, we want you to regulate us.
Yeah.
How the heck can you object to a company that's asking you to do exactly what you should be doing?
And tax us.
You know, they point to the problems that we had on another side where a gentleman actually ripped off the players and we had to do it. And what kind of penalty has he faced in the U.S.?
None.
Zero.
Because there is no regulations in place. Hey, guys, I thought they were, quote, lawmakers elected to take care of situations like this.
Yeah.
So,
I'm point.
Sorry, my little sermon's done now, but
okay.
Understand the logic there, guys.
The logic not only fails there, but it also fails in, you know, they want to cry about, oh, we need to protect children. we need to protect the problem gambler. Well, show me how the UGIA has helped one child or helped one problem gambler.
Right.
Put the social conscience amendments in there.
You can only do that through appropriate regulation.
Absolutely.
John, before we completely run out of time with you here, and I appreciate all of your time today and all of your efforts, I do have to go back to something that you mentioned very early on in our conversation today, which was the states having intrastate online gambling, which we all agree would be a bad idea because Missourians would only be playing against Missourians, Illinoisans only playing against Illinoisans, et cetera. It's bad enough if it's limited to the U.S. not being able to play the world, but state by state, that's going to be bad. But tell me where that is legislatively. We've heard that New Jersey is close to doing that, that California wants to do it, that the District of Columbia wants to do that. Where are they on that legislation? What are the chances of it being passed on those levels?
Well, I mean, New Jersey is, I think, beyond close. I think they've passed a bill, at least, that's going to be heard by the go to a vote, maybe on a referendum vote for folks there. So that is, I think that's very interesting. And it's not just internet poker, but I think it's all internet gambling and including sports betting, too, which is, which will be interesting. I think that's going to probably create some other, you know, maybe federal challenges. But
federal challenges? How about the NFL?
Yeah. I mean, the feds will be doing somebody's bidding.
Yeah.
You better close down the Meadowlands.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. California, there's, I think, at least two, maybe now three new internet poker bills that have been introduced there. So we know that they're certainly agitating to get something done, particularly when you look at their budget situation there. You know, the PPA, I wish I could say right now that, okay, this is what we're going to do in 2011 in terms of those legislative efforts. I can't say that. You know, we may very well view state by state as a probable vehicle, but one of the things I think we definitely would still have to do, we would have to do, is that there has to be some sort of clarification at the federal level of the 1961 Wire Act so that those states could, at the very least, could start compacting with each other. You know, if five big states decides to license and regulate internet poker, New York, New Jersey, Florida, you know, California, and they only can play with each other, it's not a great deal for poker players. But if those states are going to start playing with each other, that may be something the PPA can start supporting. But I don't think that can be done without a federal legislative fix of at least a clarification of the 1961 Wire Act, if not, a specific compacting agreement where states can do that. Because, you know, I think we said states by state just doing this and players only being able to play within the boundaries of that state and with operators that really have no experience in providing internet poker, I think would be really detrimental to the experience that players enjoy today.
But one other quick thing, I really appreciate you staying a little longer here for this. If you see this action on a state level, is that going to either A, prompt the federal government to try to get involved so they can have a share of the revenue, or is it going to prompt the federal government to say, well, it's a state issue, and just dump their hands of it?
You know, I think it runs both ways. You know, we've actually tried, you know, over the last week, we've really been pointing to some of the lawmakers, particularly those who are traditionally opposed to internet gaming, to say, hey, either you guys control it or the states are going to do this. And we've been pointing to them what's been going on in California and New Jersey in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't necessarily moved them 100%, but I think they recognize that if they don't act, the states are going to act. And that doesn't mean, like I said, it doesn't mean I think we're dead in the water for a federal bill even next year. But I think, you know, trying to get something done between now and the end of Congress this year would have been our best opportunity.
John Pappas is the executive director of the Poker Players Alliance, the nonprofit membership organization. You should become a member. Go to the website theppa.org. For $20, you're a premium member. You get all the updates, you get all the information, you get all the action alerts, and you help support freedom for the game that we all love. John, we really appreciate your time today. Have a very happy holiday, and we'll talk to you in the new year with updates on this, I'm sure.
Definitely. Paul, Dennis, thank you guys for having me on, and I'm sure Dennis, I'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah.
somewhere out in the country, and you know, if a Christmas miracle does happen between now and when Congress adjourns, maybe I'll be on next Tuesday. How about that?
That'd be great.
just keep me informed of what's going on. You've done a great job. I really, really thank you and the PPA and everything. Just keep me informed. Always send me an email, and if you need me somewhere, just holler.
Great. And I'm easier to get on than Sundaria, aren't I?
Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Take care. Right,
John Pappas from the PPA here on the Final Table with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I am Paul Harris. And speaking of PokerStars, a reminder, you can still play for free on PokerStars.net.
Yeah, and they've got some great things coming up now. There's been a little bit of changes in their PCA, the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. It is the kingpin, I guess you'd say, of the live tournaments that PokerStars has each year, and this one will be massive. It is unbelievable, the schedule they have down there. They've made a couple of recent changes maybe you haven't even heard about, Paul. The $5,200 buy-in for the bounty shootout is now a three-day, six-max, triple shootout format with 216 people down there. They also have a massive $100,000 buy-in super high roller event.
What?
Yes. $100,000 entry fee.
Can I qualify online for $11?
I
can probably qualify online for free.
You probably can. There's a way to do it, but it's unbelievable. The schedule has just been released. They started out with that fish and chips that I'm going to try and play.
That's fishing and poker?
Fishing and poker, and I am horrible at one of them. Let you guess which one. There are some people who would say I'm horrible at both, but that's okay. Several events are going to be televised. Their main event down there runs for several days. Last year they had over 1,500 in it. This year they expect over 2,000. Outside of the WSOP in Vegas, this will be the largest poker event in the world.
And you can still qualify online for free.
PokerStars.net. Go in there, qualify for free, work your way up through the tournaments. And I could see you down there, January 6th through January 16th.
And, of course, we will have live updates during the PCA here on the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on iTunes and on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We're sitting at the feature table in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis. If you've never played here, this is the place to play in St. Louis. Whether you're a smoker or a non-smoker, they've got the whole special smoke-free casino that we're looking at through the windows of the poker room right now. About a quarter of the place is now completely smoke-free. Of course, if you do smoke, there are still plenty of slots and table games for you to play at. Also, starting next month, this will be the place to qualify for the 2011 main event of the World Series of Poker. Dennis got in there just about 3 years ago is when he qualified for the 2008 main event. It was like 7 months before, right?
It was 3 years and 1 month. I did it in November beforehand. They started it in November that year, and the very first month, the very first event, was the one I qualified for.
And you know what happened? He went off to win $4.5 million in the main event. Well, this will be your chance starting in January. They're going to do it on the third Saturday and third Sunday of each month in a shootout format. You win your table, you advance to the final table. You win
That's
the
it.
Final table, you go to the main event. Your expenses paid, your buy-in paid, and all the rest. For details, go to the website, harrahsstlewis.com. You can also find the calendar of all the events going on here. This is the only casino in St. Louis that does two tournaments a day, every day, 7 days a week. Again, information at harrahsstlewis.com. You can also follow them on Facebook, and now you can follow the Poker Room here on Facebook as well.
And they just had, what, 90-some people in this
98
tournament?
98 today in the 1 o'clock tournament today.
Good grief.
Speaking of Harrah's, I was at their sister casino in Kansas City a couple of weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to talk about this because we spent so much time on the online bill, but I was there 2 weeks ago, ran into Brandon Stevens' brother. We had him on the show a couple months ago. He's the guy who went out on the money on the November 9 bubble, 10th place in this year's main event. His brother Rodney was there. We were playing in a 10-20 game with a $5 ante. That's the first. I played plenty of tournaments, of course, with antes. The first time I've ever played in a live casino cash game with antes, and thought it was interesting because it really spices up the action.
Well, everybody at the poker room is trying to do things to liven up the game, to loosen it up. TK the other day was talking about his 125, and he was talking about the on the PLO and the changes. Here you're talking about putting some other dead money in the pot, a $5 ante from everybody.
Yep.
You have money in the pot preflop. Everybody does. A little bit higher, a little more incentive to steal, a little more incentive to push on your button. You know, and try and get a little more aggressive.
Now, you and I have talked about in tournaments when antes come into play, should you start increasing your raise sizes to include that dead money in the middle? And you said, no, you don't want to do that. In fact, you may want to even make your raises a little bit smaller. Instead of doing a 3X, you might want to do a 2.5X or a 2.2X. Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed in this live game in Kansas City that they were way over-raising pre-flop. I would raise to $70. It's a 10-20 game, so that's a 3.5X. I was by far the smallest raiser. There were $80, $100, $120, $150 to open the pot pre-flop. So you can imagine what kind of action we had in that game that night.
Well, that would be sweet.
Now, what do you think of that, the antes in a live game affecting your raise size?
Well, actually, I like the idea of it. And on me, I still try and play again. Pre-flop, you're not for sure what the other gentleman has. It's much more difficult. All you're doing is raising the potential for the pot out there. With certain hands, that's good. Majority of time, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. I think 2.5, 3 max is a big enough bet for whatever's in that pot, and you shouldn't go overboard on it. Because I don't care if you have an ace-king pre-flop. Deuces still beat it, guys. Mm-hmm. You've got to catch something on the flop.
Yep.
You have a middle pair of eights or nines, and it comes out there with a king, jack, ten flop. You have no idea where you're at, and you've already pushed the action. You already have a big pot. I mean, it definitely livens it up, but it definitely livens up the risk factor.
Yep. They also, by the way, are having a huge game there in January. Some
20,
of the locals.
January 21st.
Are you going?
I'm supposed to, yeah.
There's a 25-50 no-limit game with a minimum buy-in of $25,000,
right,
which they tell me brings in people from Texas and Oklahoma,
yep,
and Colorado and lots of other states who want to play in that game.
Right now, as far as I know, it's going to be two tables, 18 people plus a few subs in it. And as it stands right now, I have a seat at one of the tables.
And Brandon's also going to play.
Brandon will be there, yes.
Yeah. All right, some other poker news. Breaking news today, the Bellagio had a heist this morning. At 10 to 4 this morning, a guy in a helmet pulled a gun in the pit. This is not in the poker room. This is in the pit, demanded casino chips, got $1.5 million worth of casino chips, and sped away on a black sport motorcycle. They think he may be the same guy who pulled off a robbery like this at the Suncoast, getting away with only $20,000 in chips. Well, it's a smaller casino.
Yeah, it was a test run. Trial.
Yeah, he got away with that last week. They have a description of the guy, but he was wearing a motorcycle helmet the entire time.
Yeah, okay, just a second. Walk into the Bellagio with a helmet on.
Yeah.
Walk through the Bellagio with a helmet on.
Yeah.
Walk up to the pit with a helmet on.
Yeah.
Security.
Yeah.
Duh.
Well, we talked about Bellagio security when...
Actually, that's the third event that I know of now.
Three guys, two guys we know have gotten ripped off there.
That's true. That is true.
Was it Scott Montgomery you got ripped off?
That was the second one,
just
yes.
a couple months ago at the men's room there for several thousand dollars?
Yeah. I walked into there where there are no cameras, which, understandably,
yeah.
and a guy basically held him up
right.
inside the restroom.
Come on, Bellagio. You got to have better security than that, particularly when it's $1.5 million in your chips. This is not player money. This is $1.5 million in casino chips that are being taken out of the pits. How does this guy get to the door to get to his motorcycle to get out?
Well,
it's a walk, by the way.
No, I know it is that. Actually, I can see the leaving because if you try to stop him in there, you have customers all around. If a gunfight would ensue, all sorts of problems. Actually, I can see why they would not want to stop him in the middle of the casino leaving. Now, having him as soon as he steps out the door is one thing. I don't understand how somebody can walk into the Bellagio wearing a helmet with a visor and walk all the way to a pit.
I don't get it either.
That does not make sense to me.
I don't get it either. Okay, we talked a couple of weeks ago also on the show about the 2011 World Series of Poker and perhaps having more events going on after the main event. This happened at the NAPT in November out in Los Angeles. They had the main event and some other things went on. Jack Effel and I have been communicating back and forth by Twitter. He's the tournament director for the WSOP. And he said, after a main event, events will work in some places, But at the main event, we don't believe they would get the attendance or the love they deserve. We have offered bracelet events after the main event before, back in 2005, but they did not perform as well as the events prior to the main event. However, they have done ring events in Hammond and Biloxi and in Atlantic City. Following the 1500 or 1600 and the 10K regional events, they have had other events going on. And when we host our own circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis in April, first 2 weeks of April, actually starting March 31st, but the first 2 weeks of April, there will be the $1,600 main event, and then there will be another ring event and other turbos and other things going on for a couple of days after that. So if you bust out of the main, you will have other tournaments to play. But that's some input from Jack.
Again, I got some input back from it. The PCA starts at the beginning of that two-week period and runs through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that format. A lot of people come either with a significant other or a group of people go to some of these tournaments, and if one guy is still in the main event, the other guys are still there staying with them. Or they want to stay there and they'll help support them.
Yep.
It is so nice to have a second or a third tournament that you can be playing in while he's in day three or day four of these major tournaments.
Jack also says that next year's WSOP will 100% be at the Rio. Speculation dead on moving it elsewhere. And they will have the schedule for next year out in the next couple of weeks before the end of the year. Also, Harrah's, owner of the WSOP, has announced a new sponsor, Klipsch Speakers and Headphones. Will you be able to wear rival brand headphones at the table? Yes. But here's the first. I think this will be the first time you're told you cannot use a sponsor's product after you make the money. Because once you make the money at the World Series of Poker,
absolutely,
you got to take the headphones off.
All electronic devices end as soon as you make the money.
Even if you're wearing Klipsch headphones. Okay, the big game, the Poker Stars TV show. If you don't, in St. Louis, it's not on TV, but you can watch it on PokerStars.tv. It is on some Fox stations around the country. Last week, a guy by the name of Bill Given went broke in the middle of the week. He was the loose cannon, lost all of his money. Daniel Negreanu finally made money in a high-stakes cash game, won about $65K for the week. On a table which had Doyle Brunson, Joe Hashem, Scott Seaver, Phil Galfond, Aaron Jones, and this loose cannon. But I want to ask you about this because Joe Stapleton, who does the analysis on the big game, kept referring to Daniel as a calling station. In fact, at one point, A.E. Jones, Aaron Jones, tried to bluff Daniel, and Joe said on the announcing part of the show, said, "Why are you trying to bluff Daniel? He always calls." So here's my question. Is this a popular perception, or I guess more importantly, is this just a matter of a really big-name pro in Daniel Negreanu playing against some hot, young, online young guns, and he just doesn't want to be bluffed?
Well, it's interesting. I'm gonna take it a little step further than that. A lot of things you see in real life, in every day-to-day action, translates onto the table. And people don't realize that. Have you ever started to pull around a guy to pass him on a road and he speeds up?
Mm-hmm.
No logical reason in the world for him to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're trying to go around on the right and he speeds up so he squeezes you and you can't get around him before you run into another car or whatever the heck, you know, that type of stuff.
Yes.
You know, it always happens. So then your response is you tailgate him for a minute or so, which is the dumbest thing in the world to do.
Yeah. And
so you're both acting like fools maybe. But so many times something like that happens. I have seen people at a table, at a cash table as much, if not more than even a tournament one, where they'll get check raised and they'll be on 100% bluff, have absolutely nothing in hand, but they'll still call that raise. They will still throw the extra chips in there because they don't want to appear getting pushed around or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing then, if you are maybe a known pro, if you're the guy there, you don't want to be embarrassed by somebody. When Phil Hellmuth pushed Mike Manasaw off of his pocket kings with a deuce seven by shoving on the river,
mm-hmm.
and Manasaw laid it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then he still hears about that, you know, 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Nobody wants to be in that position, and they don't play their normal poker. Daniel's a good enough player. He is not normally a calling station or should not be. Maybe if he gets on this, he doesn't want to get that hand where he gets shoved out and somebody crows and turns over a deuce seven and whatever the heck. But I'm telling you, ego has no place at a poker table.
And I think there's a lot of ego right there, and I think we're talking about a guy who just does not want to be bluffed on national TV by a young gun.
Well, and Daniel's just too good a player to let that come into place. I hope that's not the case, but I'm telling you, ego has no place at a poker table.
All right.
You have a good ego, you're going to go broke.
Another thing from the big game, 2 weeks ago, the loose cannon was a teacher by the name of David Fishman, who was up 140,000 after 97 hands. Now, they play 150 hands
yes.
on the big game. He was up 140K, which made him the leader for the NAPT Passport, which
yep.
is the big prize. And, of course, you get to keep that 140K. You're staked 100. He was up to 240. So he's plus 140, and he gets to keep that 140, which for him is 3 years' salary.
Yes.
And he got that, by the way, after beating Helmuth on a hand where Fishman so overacted, any other poker player in the world would know this guy absolutely has the nuts. But Phil was stubborn, just like we were just
yep.
talking about. Talk about ego. There's the king of ego. And he made the call. At that point, when he was up 140,000 with 53 hands to go, Fishman went into lockdown, did not play another hand, including folding pocket aces pre-flop. On another hand, he smooth called, he flatted with kings, and then when it got raised to get 3-bet, he laid down his kings pre-flop. He did not want to lose the money. Now, this guy was really emotional. This meant a lot to him. He's got a wife, he's got a kid. Laying down aces pre-flop in a cash game. Can you imagine ever doing that?
No. Not unless there were special circumstances, a satellite, you know, that type of thing. Obviously, there's always
but
places
we're talking
where
about a cash game here. Now,
but
is this a special
no.
enough circumstance? Now, remember, put yourself in
I'm
different income
to.
Bracket here.
I'm trying to, because this is for him, perhaps, life-changing type of cash.
Yes.
This is a situation where he's done far and away better than he thought he would have.
Yep.
This is also now, he is the leader, which also carries extra bonuses and benefits.
Right.
So even if he loses a small pot,
yep.
it could actually bump him out of out of first position there. I'm not going to try and second-guess him. I don't know his own personal situations. I'm not a good enough player to lay down aces pre-flop there.
Well, you know what? Special circumstances were a good idea for this guy because Phil Locke was in there with sixes and Jason Mercier was in there with fours,
mm-hmm.
and the flop came king 6-6. Locke flopped quad sixes. Can you imagine how much money David Fishman would have lost with his pocket aces in that hand?
Like I told you, he should lay down the pocket aces there, no doubt about it.
Our thanks to Harrah's St. Louis, our home casino here in St. Louis. We'll be back here next Tuesday for show number 99. For Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. Thanks also to PokerStars.net, our other sponsor, and the PPA online at theppa.org. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. Get our podcast via iTunes or on thechipleader.com.